This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Dr. Rob Walker of Pegasystems, and we're talking AI.
Thanks, Ian. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Yeah, my responsibility within Pega is around anything we have to do with what we call decisioning and next best action, which is all AI-driven.
There's a lot of confusion about AI at the moment. Is it simply a faster calculator? Is it just a set of automation? Is it really intelligence? Where are we?
I think that's a very fair question, because I don't actually blame AI so much as a lot of companies that call everything AI, even that's moderately intelligent, sometimes not even that. That's where the confusion starts. But my view on this is that we're nowhere near to an artificial general intelligence or anything like that. On the other hand, I think the whole area has made great strides in the last, I would say, 5 years. Some of it because of the new algorithms, but mostly actually because of the abundance of data that people willingly or unwillingly give to the AI engines. What I will say, though, in terms of a more intelligent calculator, I think we're actually way beyond that. There is obviously stuff where it's just maybe faster, or it goes through patterns quicker. But there are also areas where it makes inferences around what maybe consumers are going to do, or risks that are almost even alien to look at. They'll make patterns that humans would never do. Find patterns that humans would never do, make inferences that humans would never do, but work. That's getting very close to original thoughts in the constraints of a business outcome.
If we think about the last 10, 15 years of big data and analytics, we've constantly told companies that the secret to their success is all that hidden information in their data. All they've got to do is look. But they've looked, and they've looked, and they've looked, and most of them sit there, they still can't understand. So the arrival of AI that's able to not just look at the data, but actually then tie that vast body of data together and create new inferences is where those new models are going to be found. How much do customers understand the potential, and how do they begin to realize that?
To be honest, I think we have to be a little careful on what the question is. I think some people are expecting AI, and not unrealistically, to just look at data and come up with like all sorts of things that we didn't know about. The way Pega looks at this very much from top down, from a particular business outcome. We don't even want to be seen as like, okay, well, you need AI, go look at Pega. No, you need to look at us to solve a particular business outcome, especially around customer engagement. With that restraint, I think there is a lot of stuff that is happening, insights that come out of that data. We just heard, you know, Mark Zuckerberg in front of Congress testify about Cambridge Analytica. But the essence of that is that the data that they had, the big data that they had, did actually form the basis of insights that were particularly personal. Political affiliation, sexual orientation, religion, all of these things from big data that in itself was just neutral and politically correct. But from that, AI can find out, and this was not even particularly sophisticated AI, this was basically statistical analytics. But still, insights came out of that data that is incredibly powerful.
From a marketing perspective, when we look at the data that we possess, we've acquired personal data on individuals, we've acquired information on their buying habits, their spending habits, we know where they live from other databases, the value of their houses, we can infer from their job title often what their salary band is. Those are things that marketing teams have worked on for quite a lot of time. What extra is the AI providing? Is it just getting there faster, or is it seeing different things that those skilled marketing teams just can't see because of the quality and quantity of data?
Yes. No, I think it's definitely the latter. Because I've been in this AI space for much longer than I want to admit on a podcast. But the bottom line to that is that we've been running tests when this was really novel against marketers or other very smart people in other areas to see if out of the same data we would get to other insights. And that's definitely the case. That competition was over 10 years ago, honestly. All the things you are mentioning, I think, from the stuff that people know about devices, where they live, inferences about their neighborhoods and likely income, that's all great input data. What AI just does is get much better and much more actionable insight out of that. And partly that is because it's faster. Partly it's also because the algorithms are very clever. There's a lot of assumptions in humans and a gut feel and things like that that are just really no match. It was maybe a match in the 70s when there was not so much data, so that you can have this is like the Mad Men kind of thing in that era. But now with so much data, it's not even a contest.
But that brings its own challenge, doesn't it? Because as we drill into that data and we use that data and exploit it, errors in that data become amplified. and we see this daily. How do we tune, how do we make the AI more accurate, given that it's often starting with flawed data to begin with?
Yes, again, from our PEGA perspective, we take a very, very practical approach to this. We just look at these outcomes. So this is why everything with us starts with the outcomes, whether that is revenue or risk mitigation or customer satisfaction, but some outcome, some KPI that you're trying to optimize. And then you bring in the AI to help you do that. And under those circumstances, we just look at what works. It's not actually rocket science. We switch on the AI. We have a control group, which is either random or it's human judgment or whatever it is. And we just look at what works. And what we see invariably is that AI outperforms humans. I cannot even remember cases, honestly, and this goes back a while, where that wasn't the case if it was about anything complex. So that means that there is a reasonable number of data attributes, you have enough volumes, there is so much assumptions that marketers make, especially if they've been around for a long time, where they say, oh, well, they have a segment in mind. Humans at best can maybe combine 5 different factors, right? If you're maybe a chess master, maybe it's 10, I don't even know. But to weigh 1,000 different things and look at them over time and look at what things are just spurious correlations and what is real with real evidence, that's way beyond human.
Weighing that data and understanding what is acceptable and how we got there is a challenge. You've talked here at Pegasystems about the T-switch, the issue of whether the decision-making by the AI should be opaque or transparent. One of the challenges we're going to see is people are going to want to say to the AI, how did you get to that decision? One vendor I spoke to said, oh, well, that would be impossible because AI would have to teach you a higher order of mathematics. From a business perspective, that just doesn't fly. So how do we actually get there and make it easy for people to understand, make it obvious, but at the same time, allow that person to say, but that's a false premise that you've made?
First of all, I'd like to say that in terms of the opacity of models, that the benchmark to this is not some hypothetical benchmark. The benchmark, if it's fair, should be human assessment. So for instance, the thing I always try to say and compare it to is if you look at medical diagnosis. So we're not in this space, but just to make it philosophically real. If it requires higher order math skills to actually understand the AI, which maybe a normal medical practitioner would not, let alone their patients, would you not use this if it actually is known to diagnose people better? Because I would go for the AI in a heartbeat. But I think that is where we get to the challenges. It's easy to say AI needs to be transparent, and obviously we'll get to the T-switch. So we agree with that, that you need to be able to have that control. But transparent AI is less powerful than opaque AI, and humans are not actually transparent. And secondly, there are lots of situations where the opacity may still be a business case.
I'm glad you brought up the medical one, but we all know that when something goes wrong, when the treatment turns out to kill the patient, everybody's going to want to know, why did it take that line? We need some way to be able to undo that opacity to be able to see why that was there. There's also the issue of trust. A doctor, and we've seen this with IBM and Watson, they don't want to just hand over decision-making. What they really want is they want something that's more advisory than decision-making. How do we move forwards to being able to trust it when it's opaque, but at the same time be able to stand by a decision that we may not truly understand?
These are great questions. This will be the questions of this decade and the next one. But I think it's also a matter of the general population, but also the next generation, getting more comfortable with AI. Because again, I think AI in that sense is held to an unfair standard. It needs to explain itself. Humans can't explain itself. They have this gut feel and intuition all the time. And then they construct an explanation after the fact that's completely false to sort of make it think like, yeah, wow, I thought about all this before. No, that's not how it actually works. If you want AI to be powerful, you need to have it to the same standards. And there will be decisions and calculations that you will not understand. So I think we just have to accept that. I think the algorithms will become, and I've seen examples, so complicated that you can't explain them. So then the question is, and this is where the T-switch comes in, so that is for transparency, but also for trust. It's like, okay, let's at least control where we are allowing opaque AI with its higher accuracy, and where do we insist on transparency. that is the question. So, for instance, maybe for marketing offers or for all sorts of things or for image recognition, maybe you don't care that the AI can do its magic. And if it's right, it's right. But in other areas, and this may or may not include medical diagnosis, so that's not my space, so I can speak freely about it, but I'm really curious where that will go when AI diagnosis is more accurate than human doctors, but we don't understand it. It will be like magic, but it may work. But on the T-switch, so you may want to say, this is an area where we insist on transparency, either because we want to explain it to management or to the people that are subjected to that decision or to the regulator. But that control, granular control, so if you take a big enterprise company, they may say, these algorithms cannot be activated in this decision engine because it doesn't meet our compliance policy or our transparency policy. That's the level of control that you have. But I think companies that would ban opaque AI altogether should also ban a lot of humans. And secondly, I think they will be at a competitive disadvantage.
You mentioned compliance, and compliance and regulators are always going to be behind where technology is. By the time we come up with a law to deal with a problem, the problem's been existing for tens of years often. In this particular field, we have laws that are changing on a regular basis. Privacy is a very good example, and it's very apt when we talk about marketing. You've been talking at this show about getting to one-to-one marketing, the self-optimizing marketing plan driven by your own AI. But into that, at some point, somebody's going to say, where did you get that data on me? And this is going to be a challenge for the AI, because the AI is going to have to say, I got it from this data set or that data set. And then somebody's going to have to explain where the data set came from. How prepared are customers to be able to play the self-optimizing AI over their data sets, but be able to transparently show that the data was obtained legally, fairly, and can be used?
Yes, and that's obviously the question that GDPR is raising for Europe. That's a fair question. AI will also, again, really help. First of all, with AI, you would actually need a lot less data. So that will just make life a lot simpler, because they would maybe look at, for a sample of their customers, or maybe 10,000 different data elements, and then say, oh, actually, I can be 98% as accurate with just these 10. And then we only have to ask the customers for that kind of permission. That is a fair and transparent process. What companies and large organizations will need to realize is how much transparency, or let me put it this way, what's the monetary value, what's the value to the customer of using their data? And that's not just about being relevant. I think that what it will go is that a lot of companies say, well, unless you opt in with this, this service we just can't do, or we can't do it at a cost basis that is worth it to us. So please unsubscribe and you can't use Google Mail anymore. But I think that is what will happen. In other areas, there will be discounts for people where they can assess the risk, for instance, more accurately. And if people say, well, you can't use this data to assess the risk, the companies are going to assume the worst. And it will be interesting to see from a consumer perspective where that will go.
Do you see, though, AI being used on the other side of that? And that is because companies don't know what data they've got on individuals. They don't know where the data came from. The AI has the potential to actually search through all that data, draw those correlations and decide all this data relates to this individual or that individual, and provide companies with a much faster way of identifying privacy data.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea. I haven't heard that use case, but I can totally see how you could do that. I will say, though, that GDPR will require companies to understand where the data comes from. We'll see when the first lawsuits are there how careful companies are going to be. Because obviously, from a data perspective, on consumers, it's a complete jungle. People are reasonably naive about how much can be inferred from the device that you're using, how you're using it, what apps. There's so much inference that can happen. Consumers will probably use the rights they've now been given to say, well, where did the data come from? Who did you sell it to? And I think that will rationalize a lot of this data jungle that's out there from an AI perspective. AI will probably need less data than is now made available to it.
If we look at the data we hold in organizations, it naturally contains bias. If we've always traded with a certain set of people for a certain value of product in a certain territory, and AI using that as part of its learning will assume that that's a natural thing, and it will start to marginalize other opportunities. How do we begin to discover where the bias sits in our AI data in order to be able to remove it?
This is obviously now at the forefront of a lot of things, because now people are using their data and use AI to make all sorts of inferences. But it's an age-old thing. I remember, again, a long time back when we did credit risk assessment for banks. And that's just narrowing it down. It's the same case where you would look at your banking customers, calculate the risk, And then you would say, okay, so now we understand exactly who's going to pay the bill and who's not going to pay the bill. But if you then apply that through the door population, the people that actually come in, there is the bias, because you've only been looking at people that actually were accepted as customers. That's a common problem. There's common solutions to that, to unbias that. And typically the way that works is to look at the same, I'll keep it to the very narrow area of this credit risk because it's simple. You're looking at actual customers, and if there's a bias, for instance, if somebody at the bank had said, well, actually men are completely unworthy of getting loans, so there's only women in the database, then clearly the model would only know about female behavior around repaying the loan. So that would be the bias, or just an extreme example. What you do though is you look at that through the door population. So all the people that applied for a loan, male and female, and geographies and all sorts of different things, and then you compare them to customers that you actually have. And that will give you a very accurate bias. So you can say, okay, well, clearly our customer base is much more, it's older, it's richer, it's whatever it is, than the people that actually approach us. And then you can use that to unbias your models. So that's nothing new, but it's cool.
That's an interesting limited case, but for a lot of companies, they don't have that limited case. They don't start with a limited case. They start with a data set. They don't often see the bias. In fact, I'd argue that most of them have no clue that there's a bias in their data. Therefore, the amplification by the AI won't be a shock to them. They just assume that that's a natural thing for their company. So how do we learn how to identify that?
The answer to that is because, first of all, if there is a bias in your model, and there will be, to your point, it simply will not work. We are maniacally focused on business outcomes, so that's very important. So the AI is self-learning. So it will look at existing customers, and it will probably have a bias, but that will mean it actually fails. It's not very accurate, and it will immediately see that when it's used in the wild. The moment it is going, if you're a bank, and now you are pushing up and you banner ads to people and use AI to do that, people never click on it because actually your data is not correct. The AI will learn from that and bias itself. So it will look at like, oh, I thought people in this age group were always going to say yes to this, but now I'm learning that that's not the case. That's the thing. You can only do that, though, for AI that actually gets outside information. I think that is also your point. It's basically, if this was a self-driving car, only drove on some racetrack, all its biases would be viable. But then the moment you put it on another road, it wouldn't actually work. With the kind of AI certainly we have in customer engagement, the AI always invariably gets exposed to outside interactions, and therefore any bias it will unlearn very quickly.
Can we assume that the AI will always self-learn? Because one of the quickest ways to do this is somebody observing what it's doing, is to have a question and answer mode, to say to the AI, why did you not offer to that person? Why do we only have customers in this group? What is on here? There's a two-way opportunity here to learn from not just subject matter experts, but just from a general interrogatory interface.
Now, I think that is a very interesting idea, but I think even there, in many cases, you wouldn't understand the answer, or the answer would take like a week to actually spell it out. The answer would be something like, okay, the reason I did give this person the wrong answer, the wrong offer, was because of, well, she was this in this age group, and then we looked at this neighborhood where the average house price is, and it would be like 1,000 different things, and then the combinations between them, and it would say, and I tried that out 10,000 times, and it all worked, and now it's different. I don't think that will suffice as an explanation.
We come back to the trust question here. One of the things that people hate about credit scores, or when they're turned down for a loan, is that the stock answer from the organization is, well, we can't tell you why, because it's a trade secret. What they really mean is, we have no clue. If AI is going to be a better decision maker and restore trust, it has to move beyond that. Where are we on that journey of getting that better explanation?
Here, I think, and this is a great example, is this is where the T-shirt comes in. If you want that explanation for this particular use case, it would be very appropriate to say, for this particular reasoning, we insist on transparent AI, so we can give you that answer around your credit score. That's the way you would do that. If, however, you use opaque AI, there just will not be an answer. It's like asking a human to explain her intuition. That is a thing that the brand value of companies will partly be reflected in making that choice. I will say, however, again, to credit risk, equally, if we look at the whole crisis that we had here in 2007, 2008, the fact that you insist on an explanation will make the AI much less effective. This is the quandary we're in. A lot of people, to put it bluntly, will be given mortgages they really shouldn't have because you insisted on simplistic algorithms that you wanted to be able to explain themselves.
I think that's a great conundrum. I can see regulators demanding transparency and then completely falling apart when they realize they have become the problem. Rob, thank you very much for that.
Okay, you're welcome.